We're back. Winning at life.
Yeah, we were on here yesterday. We'll be on here tomorrow, the day after that. Live Financial News Talk Radio. Let's talk about money, growing it, mostly about how about keeping it. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. If you'd like to join the conversation, we can talk about savings. How about your bills, credit cards, taxes? I talk about taxes a lot lately. Had a number of discussions today. Here's the phone number to call. Join the conversation. 504-260-0995.
Well, the news is flying fast in the financial world. Boeing sells its first 737 MAX since they got grounded after the spate of accidents last year.
I was seeing bad news this morning about probably more delay. Who'd they sell one to? Were you buying one or something?
I bought.
They give you a deal?
No, I switched over and I got a G7. They're not out yet, but I'm getting a bootleg G7. An unnamed
Chinese made.
An unnamed private jet company made the purchase of the MAX. This is like an unnamed source, right? Maybe were they really even sold? Can we even prove
what, is it? They say, yeah, somebody bought, but they wouldn't let us share who they are.
That's
kind of like, hey, can I get a deal?
That's exactly what we're looking at.
I'll order 100, but I want a sweet deal.
Yeah, you probably could lowball them at this point.
Yeah, because here's one of the things that, you know, if I had some extra pocket change, probably might order 20 or 30 of them. Why? There is huge, huge demand for aircraft. The waiting list is years long. And, you know, once this thing gets flying, I'm telling you, they are going to get lit up with orders. But everybody's kind of like, you know, it's like that Imperial truck. Like, you know, it is the bomb. We want some truck. But we're here, they're having problem with emissions, clearing, you know, their certification. But gosh, that truck is ridiculously great. Wait, you going to order one? No, not until I know we can start driving them. So knowing there's a ridiculous pent-up demand for trucks, nobody can meet demand. Okay, I'll get in line, and then I'll sell my places later.
You're crazy to not order one.
Yeah, I said, okay, we're going to start getting some of those Imperial trucks. By the way, the Imperial truck is some mythical truck that's all that, just as an example. But, you know, people are going to be waiting years for those trucks. I'll go ahead and get in line, and I'll sell my slots and I'll just pocket the money and move on because I don't want no giant jet. You realize how much fuel they cost, use, and cost? Yeah, all that. Like, I can't afford that, but
Angie,
I'd like to get slotted.
Let me ask you, Angie, can you take a note for me real quick? In Gregory's hypothetical world, we live under a system of governance that is an empire. Just thought that was interesting. No, we don't live in a democracy or constitutional republic. We have an empire.
The empire?
Yeah, we live under the empire. It's like Star Wars universe. There's an empire.
Oh, Imperial trucks.
Yeah, Imperial trucks.
I didn't connect that way. That was not in my mindset.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was just the state-owned.
If they start building spaceships, then I'll get some of those Imperial spaceships and we'll have slotted and I'll sell them to somebody else that's in bad need of aircraft.
Since it's
a spacecraft or trucks.
It's a government company, so of course there's going to be a backlog and they're not going to be on schedule. It's kind of what I was thinking there. But yeah, that's positive news for Boeing. Something else I saw that, like I said, the financial news was flying fast today. Presidential candidate Joe Biden, former vice president as well, brought up his former boss's old tax changes. In 2015, Obama, in one of his bills, had some changes to the capital gains tax. He calls it a loophole, but it's the step-up basis you get when you pass along stock or real property to your heirs. Your capital gains get stepped up. Now, if your estate is over a certain threshold, you will lose the step-up basis on the property that you pass down through inheritance. Just a proposal. There's not pen to paper. There's not a bill floating through Congress. But we had this conversation in 2015, and it's back in 2019.
So Biden brought this up?
Biden brought this up.
Well, you know, he hadn't been one to talk about raising taxes. He's left that to Bernie. What's the Indian lady that's running for president?
Elizabeth
Warren. The
classic Indian name, Elizabeth.
Yeah, classic. You know, the one with the blue eyes. She's been so all over crushing the economy, raising taxes, stuff like that as well. So I'm surprised, you know, he hadn't already gotten the mix. Okay, we're going to eliminate some of the capital gain.
Yeah, well, he didn't stop the fun up. There. He wanted to raise another tax over here. He also proposed capping the itemized deductions the wealthiest Americans can take at 28%. So that was also part of what Obama had rolled into a similar reform bill in 2015 that ended up not passing. But it's back on the table.
Oh, no. I would tell you, I'm not running for president, but I would probably raise the capital gain tax rate, you know, to 25% if they're, you know, let's throw a number out there. If you're selling $550 million or more in assets, make it $10 million. Over $10 million in sales in a year, yeah, your capital gain tax rate's 25%. I'll raise it.
But this furthers your overall context that, you know what, you need to live in a world where you're expecting taxes to go up. This is another proposal, another day, another two taxes were proposed being increased.
Yeah, and I'll even add in that if you're selling over $500 million in taxable gains on stock, you know, like Amazon, okay, it'll be 30% tax rate. And that's still, look, in this one, that is still a bargain, but honestly, that is the loophole. Like, oh, Bezos sells $1 billion a year, and what's he taxed at?
20%. Yeah,
he don't need no salary. Just sell $1 billion in stock every year. It's like free money, really, when you think of 20%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, a lot of this other stuff they're proposing and how they're going about it doesn't make sense. Now, my proposal isn't going to solve the world. It isn't going to be enough money to pay for Medicare for all. It is not going to wipe out student debt and all. But if we're talking about some fairness, I think that's kind of fair. But to keep and say you own people that are making large salaries, to keep ramping up on them, that you're just killing everything that way as well. And those selling $1 billion of stock a year, they can afford to pay another 10% on that. That's my thought, not outrageous. And oh, by the way, I'm not running for president.
Well, on the other side of the aisle, they have looked at changing the capital gains tax, but in the other direction, almost making a cut to where you would get a step-up basis. They would index it for inflation, your basis for inflation. It died in the House last year, and then Congress flipped.
So why are we needing an inflation step-up basis? Your step-up basis, you're talking about when somebody dies, you get a step-up. But if you're holding it, it keeps growing for inflation?
No, I think I misspoke there. So like if you buy a house at 100,000 and you sell it at 150, your capital gains isn't going to be the 50 grand. You'll get a capital gain step up with inflation, whatever.
But if you've lived in that house two of the last 5 years and we'll just call this a round number. Let's say your profit's not over 500,000. You're not being taxed anyhow.
All right, it's a separate house. It's a rental house.
Okay.
All right. It's a rental house. So they would take the inflation rate for every year and add that to the value of your house. So you'd really only get the house adjusted for inflation and then up to 150.
Once again, people are depreciating property and lowering their cost basis. I don't think we need that in the system as well. Why are you giving them another workaround?
Well, because it's...
Then they shouldn't depreciate their houses.
Okay.
Then because they're getting that tax benefit on the other side.
All right.
So why are we giving away tax dollars?
Well, look, it's not that we're giving away tax dollars. It's that
it's a capital gain tax as well anyhow. They're growing in value. Renters are paying it off. So why 20% is too much? So, we got a little, you know, we got to shrink their margin there.
Right. Okay. Let's say you bought a house that wasn't your primary residence. It was $100,000 and it was static in value, but not in constant dollars because the value of the dollar is shrinking. So the spending purchase of that house, you can't have, ethically speaking, you can't have deliberate planned inflation and a capital gains tax without just being a thief. Does that make sense?
Well, they're stealing from everybody that draws Social Security that pays taxes because they've never inflated adjusted those basis of where they're either 50% or 80% inclusive. They've never adjusted that for inflation. So it means majority of the people drawing Social Security are paying taxes of some kind versus very few were when it was back in the 70s.
Now we agree again. Totally agree.
Yeah. So I disagree on that, but I think they ought to inflation adjust Social Security, but they're not. Why? They want the tax revenue, something that originally, you know, or creator of it was Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Yeah. He said it wasn't going to ever be taxed. That didn't go over.
They just say whatever it takes to get it passed. You can keep your doctor, all that good stuff.
So we were talking about that on turning on Social Security, and there was no reason to wait a few months because, you know, when you're deferring beyond FRA, it's 8% annualized, but you're actually getting the credit each month that you defer. Some people have the misconception like, oh, then I'll have to wait a whole year to get my 8%. No, you're credited by each month that you defer, as well as on the opposite end of taking it early, you know, each month you're ahead, you're kind of feed penalized, so to speak, for each month that you're turning that on early in that case. But she's a few months early. She is excited about it. From his side, he's going to wait to FRA. For him, it's a few more years, or really 2 years. And he has a larger check anyhow. So that was kind of the reasoning there is, from her standpoint, we're not trying to defer her check to create a larger one. His is going to be bigger no matter what. His thing would be whether or not he continues to defer. From their asset standpoint, they have the capability of waiting longer if they want to. They have the assets. They have the ability to generate income to meet their monthly needs. You know, what have assets do for you? It generates income that you can spend every month. That's purpose of ultimately why we save, accumulate money, because I do believe there is no retirement without monthly income to spend.
Was just covering the Medicare premium part of the conversation on, might as well turn it on a couple months early.
They both are Medicare eligible.
Right. And so if you have Social Security, they just take your premium out, you check.
Yeah, but they're on company plans.
Oh, okay.
So, but now she'll switch over, you know, next month she'll sign up for that as well. Cause you have that window after you separate from your employer to go ahead and sign up for the Medicare portion as well.
All right. I noticed something from the show that sort of overlapped into a conversation that we didn't have on the show, where last week when we were talking about the Bayou Steel, or anytime someone gets separated from their job or companies are going out of business, a lot of times you'll see buyouts. And we had to have the conversation last week because there was another person in the office with a lump sum pension buyout offer. And the conversation you have isn't so much as, okay, what's the amount of money it would take for me to live the rest of my life on that I need to spend or live the rest of my life off? It's how much money would it take to generate the income that would sustain my current standard of living? So you're not looking at the pile as some sort of existing spend down. You're looking for the pile to be big enough to generate the income that you would live off of. Well, there was a court case where someone was suing their former employer. And they were asking for what was, I would used to think it was a ridiculous amount, but now the way you've got me thinking is, okay, so he's asking for $2 million. That sounds like a lot of money for what happened to him, but to replace his income for the rest of his life, that really comes out to, I mean, what does $2 million generate for you on an annual basis?
It depends on his age, but I would assume he's probably under age 50 in that case.
He's about my age.
Yeah, I would say that's probably $30,000 to $70,000 a year of income capability. We don't want to be at the 4%. That's going to spend down assets.
Right.
It depends on how long he has on the income side there. But if he's 40, he's got a long time on that other side. I would rather be at 3% per million. That's $60,000.
So this show has changed my thinking on that, on lawsuits and stuff. The reason why some of these judgments seem so huge, they're not really that inflated. The purpose isn't how much will make this guy whole for what happened to him on that one day. The thing is, you have to think about, or they must be thinking about, because this show has warped me in a good way, is the generation, the capabilities of that money to not be spent down. But it sounds like the discussions you have about pension buyouts.
Well, on settlements, I don't think they're going in there and thinking about the assets that creates a perpetual income. They're working it out to what's his life expectancy and assuming returns, and it gets spent down by his retirement time. They're not going to kick out $200,000 a year, they're not going to give him $2 million. They're kind of looking for, okay, you're likely to live to age 88. How much money at this income at say 3% zeros out that. Why would they do that? Well, because it's a lower settlement number, not a bigger.
Now, doesn't this sound a lot like the discussions we have on whether or not the pension buyout offers a good deal or not?
Right. You know, and since you brought that up, what did GE go and do? You know, that used to be on the Dow.
They froze pensions for 20,000 workers.
Yeah.
100,000 people who are expecting a pension but haven't received it yet have theirs frozen as well. 100,000 people, Gregory, are in this pension system.
Yeah. You know why? It's not sustainable for them financially. It's a problem. So they froze it, which is going to then lead to offers of buying people out of their pension. And they'll start low, but that's what they really want to do, is get relieved of that obligation. You know, yeah, they froze 100,000 people, but think of all the people they already have on the books. The company's been around long time, long, long time, in fact. Yeah, huge obligations, and that's not working well for them.
All right, so you're gonna see more pension offers come through. It'd just be nice if people had a little bit of prime in the pump.
You know, it's just going to, you know, what they shifted to is they're going to kick in for those, I guess, I read 3% for those that the defined benefit went away, but they have defined contribution plans, which 401k, so they're going to kick in 3% for those. And they're going to do a 50% match up to 8%. So it's a 4% match, essentially. So that's kind of what they're doing on that side. But that doesn't have some unending obligation, because, you know, what's affecting pensions even more now? Because think about, you know, when they created their pension some long time ago, they sure weren't expecting people to live into their 90s, which is the case. Huge, huge obligation.
Well, they have that on one end, and on the other end, they're getting pulled in the other direction because the 10-year treasury is rocking 1.6% today, 1.5%. You know, that's the foundation of so many of these pension funds. Some of them are required by law to hold a certain amount of...
Yeah, and when you look at returns, they're having to use a lower return estimation, because I'm sure decades ago they were using higher numbers that were not sustainable. We've seen that get pension funds too. So when you're short, you've got to kick in this money. And GE, I believe, they have a lot of other problems, like making money.
Yeah, and selling off the pieces. And once they start to sell off the pieces, now how are you going to pay for 100,000 pensions? Literally 100,000 pensions. 100,000 salaries for people who are not contributing anything to the company today.
That's the ones they froze, but what about how many they already have?
It's got to be huge. It might be in the millions, right? All right, Greg, just a quickie here. I was looking up something for today's show and going through some old notes on a show we did in 2013. I had the top 20 news stories of 2013, and I figured this would be a fun thing to run through here just to see what's still relevant and what we were silly about just 6 years ago. All right. So for the show that we did at the end of 2013, where we talked about our top 20 news stories, number 20 was the Supreme Court's gay marriage ruling. Gay marriage has now been legal across the land for 6 years. Pope Francis replacing Benedict. Number 18 was Detroit's bankruptcy. Detroit, still there. We had a lot of fun with Detroit's bankruptcy on this show. Number 17, North Korea nuke threat. Number 16, the Egypt violence instability. The Arab Spring and stuff, remember that? 15 was Afghanistan security withdrawal. Number 14 was the George Zimmerman trial. Oh, I'm glad we hadn't heard that name in a while. Number 13, immigration reform. Number 12, Department of Justice journalist investigations. Remember they were bugging Cheryl Atkinson and that guy from Fox News and his parents. Number 11, the Fed stimulus policy / Dow surpasses 16,000.
Huge milestone.
Yeah, we're at like 26,000 and change now. Number 10, Syria civil war, Iran nuke threat, gun debate, GOP 2016 strategy, Boston Marathon bombing, NSA domestic spying, the debt ceiling, doing that still, IRS, Benghazi, and Obamacare. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Please don't worry,
'cause I'm all welcome back. I'm Winning at Life, live financial news talk radio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, along with James Parker. So we were talking about GE freezing all these pensions, about 100,000 of them. You have any idea how many employees they have?
Five.
They have 283,000 employees in 2018. Maybe a few more, a few less at this point. But
they did the Sears thing where they've moved to defined contribution plans, right? Didn't they like in their pension? I just read that story like yesterday. They in their pension plan in like 2012 or 2008 or something to that effect. I'm sorry. I should have memorized that article I read yesterday, but I didn't.
Well, pensions are going away, but you can create your own pension. You know, you could take and convert your 401k to guaranteed lifetime income or a portion of the assets. It's a novel idea, you know. Do half your assets to a guaranteed lifetime income with spousal continuation. Yeah, create your own pension. If you do that with half of it, guess what? You can't mess it up. Stock market crash won't make it go away. You want to know how to do that? Use the fixed annuity. Simple as that. That's what annuities do, is kick out income.
Okay, so does everyone know this, though? You say
I don't think everybody knows this.
You say this like it's common knowledge, but in your estimation, if we just threw a rock and hit a random person on the sidewalk and said, hey, do you know what an annuity is? What's the percentage of people you think would give us the correct answer?
Probably less than half.
Okay, good. We're on the same page then. The half that does know.
Maybe we should do that one day.
Not the actual rock thing, but
no,
just not,
no, we don't want to throw a rock into a crowd. No, just go on a busy street corner where people are crossing. You know, you can do that in the city.
Let's go down to somewhere. Bourbon. Let's just ask people.
I don't know about that. That's like a reach. Maybe a Poydras.
Okay.
Go to Poydras. Where do you get this bourbon? I don't want to go to the French Quarter. Let's go Poydras somewhere.
It's just where I think of pedestrians, Gregory. This isn't much of a pedestrian
town. Let's go to Navarre Beach then.
Navarre? Where's Navarre Beach?
Over in Alabama, isn't it?
Oh, you mean...
You threw bourbon out there. Well, why not Navarre Beach?
Let's go to Floribama, sure.
Even better. We'll do it at Floribama, and we ought to like ask a dozen or so people a random question. But while we're at it, I think we ought to do a couple other things. You know what? Leno used to do that.
Jaywalking.
Yeah, we could do that. We'll create our own version. But actually, I think that's a neat idea with some topics. Want to just see what people know.
All right, write it. I'll do it.
Okay.
Okay, so once these people find out what an annuity is, just generally speaking, you put a bunch of money into a financial product, and at some point it starts spitting checks back at you. Some of them can be like a lump sum payout. Some of them can be a monthly check. Some of them can go for your entire life. Some of them go period certain.
We did a show. It's going back a few years now. You and I did a show about the history of annuities and how it really has been around for hundreds of years, this concept of paying out money over a period of time. And structurally, that's what annuities do. You can accumulate, put money in there, and have it pay out income. Originally, that's what they were set up for, is you put money in, and then it kicks out monthly income. What gained popularity in the early 1900, especially around the Great Depression, was because the banks were unstable. You had banks closing. Remember, financials were a mess prior to the Great Depression. And people were looking for a way that I don't need income, but I need a place to put my money. Fixed interest annuities really gained a lot of popularity and actually became safe havens because Babe Ruth pulled his money out the market. And where did he put it?
Fixed
interest annuities. So fixed interest annuities, meaning they're not needing income, so they're in deferral. We've not started income or distributions, because there's two things you can do. You can start distributions from annuity, or you can annuitize it, which means you're getting a payout for a specific period of time. Could be like the next 5 years or the rest of your life, for example, or the rest of your life and your spouse's life. But that's in deferral. So we don't need income, so we're deferring. And for the longest time, that only option on deferral was interest. But came into the 90s, somebody had an idea. Well, instead of interest, why don't we just link it to, say, Let me kind of be imaginative. Let's link it to the S&P 500 and let's get the growth based upon the upside of the market. So then what evolved from that was fixed indexed annuities. So now you have all kind of variations of that. Now, keep in mind what backs this up, the reserves of the insurance company. For the most part, that's pretty solid history from doing that. So now you could grow it by deferral, by gaining interest, or linking to various indexes to get the upside of the market, because a fixed indexed annuity is not exposing you to downside because you're not investing in, you're just linking to. Novel concept. Hey, get the upside. Or you could do a combination of both. But you could also, at some point, you could say, hey, start sending me a check every month. Or let's annuitize and create an absolute income. I like the first twist on that is at some point I want to start getting distributions out because I don't have to annuitize to take income, but I can take a portion of my assets and kind of protect it by structuring it that way. And where from an asset class, where would I probably like to place that return wise? Probably somewhere maybe between bonds and equities. You know, equities, you know, historically have pretty good returns, but why? Because they have to make up market losses. Bonds are fairly consistent. And you look, you can have bond strategies inside of a fixed index. No, you could link to bonds as well, but it's a way of taking risk off a portion of your assets. And I'm one that believes you should have a blend. And I think that should be in the mix.
You mentioned this comes from insurance companies. And it was eye-opening to me working on the show that fixed annuities are the opposite of life insurance. They come from the insurance world, but they solve the opposite problems that life insurance does.
That's kind of a good way to define it is life insurance protects you from dying too soon, your family, and annuities protect you from living too long because they can guarantee income keeps coming in.
Well, on the
mailbox money, you ever heard of that mailbox money? A lot of people have it. We used to always get checks in the mail. You ever get a check in the mail anymore, James?
We did the found money with the state treasurer and he sent us two checks.
He said, you got some mailbox money.
We did. Yeah. It's a rare thing. It's once a year. Really. But also, when we talk about how it's to protect you from living too long, you know, financially speaking, the risk against living too long, you're still not a big fan. And many of the callers that call in on the show of taking the life option, you're more of a period certain guy when you choose your payout options.
Well, and that's really, cause I'll tell you what people dislike is the life option. Meaning if I die, the rest of the money doesn't pay out. Poof, it's gone. Yeah, that's a life income option. It's like the pension. What does people dislike about pensions? Well, we turn it on and I'll do spousal continuation. If I die, she keeps getting it, but then she dies and it doesn't pay out the rest of the money. No, it stops there. People don't like that end. They kind of want that absolute that all the assets are going to pay out. So, you know, and the pensions count on people dying early, leaving money to cover the other pension obligations. And that's the way it works. But I like the period certain as well as most people. I want the absolute payout. So when I say period certain, if I chose a 30-year period certain, that check is paying every month for the next 30 years. I could die year 10, but it's paying for the next 30 years. That is what a period certain does. It keeps paying for that entire period.
Let's go to Jeff in Mobile. You're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Jeff?
Hi, guys. Appreciate your show. I listen when I can. Got a question for you. You were talking a lot about these deferred income products and annuities, things like that. And I was wondering, do you guys take a look at these? They're not considered century bonds, but they're ultra-long-term bonds. They're issued by companies like Southern Company and AT&T that are issued at rates over 5.5%. As a means to act like similar to annuities for people?
No. Gosh, that makes me uncomfortable too when you mention somebody like AT&T. being a viable company for another 50 years or something. That's one of the most debt-laden companies in our country, and I'm super glad the CEO is stepping down, because I think, you know, he leaves on a good note. He acquires all these media companies, but I think that was a good cover for the mess he's made of one of the great companies in the country. So yeah, I'm probably telling you more than you wanted to hear, but know, I'm just, that doesn't make me comfortable there from. So that is a risk offering when we're talking about annuities from a fixed interest or fixed index standpoint. We're basically taking the risk off the table. The insurance company picks that up. You know, it's subject to the strength and underlying assets that they have, and I'm not endorsing anyone in particular, but we use that as a safe money option where we're not exposing the money directly to risk. You know,
okay, let me ask you a question. I went out and looked at something like there's a website out there that sells what they consider immediate annuities or deferred annuities. And help me understand where I might be wrong here, but I gave them a number and let them run the numbers on it. And it looked like to me, when I reverse engineered the calculations, that basically the way that it looked to me like is that they were taking T-bill rates plus my expected age and annuitizing my money plus the T-bill return over that same period of time. Am I off in thinking on that way? Because it looks to me like with the ultra low interest rates we're at right now, I'm really not going to be getting a big return because T-bills are at next to nothing.
And I would say you're right about that, because we, now what, why I brought that up on the air, because it is an option to guarantee that. Now, if you kind of put your money, say, in Vanguard's S&P 500 fund, and I've talked about this before on the show, and I don't have the ticker symbol up for it, but if you put $1 million in there, started taking out $40,000 a year in 1999 and increased it at 3% inflation, your $1 million would, at the end of last year, would have been down to about $651,000. So that equities is surely not sustaining it from. And that's a 7.50% return that fund performed, but it did not keep the assets intact because of volatility. So on the other end, that's a net, that really equates out to negative assets, versus we're talking about an income annuity based, say, at 1%. You at least know absolutely what that's going to do. Now, I'm not a fan of let's go and put our money into an immediate annuity at 1%. I would, and it depends. If you've got a specific amount of money you're needing to kick out over that time and create that lockdown situation, that's what it's for. Otherwise, I would rather use asset classes, and I would want to use some assets in a fixed indexed annuity, because I also know historicals, there are some decent returns there that range from 3 to 6%. There, and we can take distributions from that money, because I really don't want to do annuicide.
Right.
I mean annuitization.
Right.
Yeah. And look, we're all likely to mostly, I talked to clients the other day, you know, they've got like $3.5 million and don't need a lot of income. Actually, I talked to two like that recently, and they're just not ever going to stress their assets. So they're never having a spend down. Most people are, because they don't have that kind of money saved. So when you're taking a 4% stream and inflating it, you are going to have a spend down over time. That you need to wrap your mind around, because that is the way it's going to be for most people that have saved money. But what we want to do is not run out of money. And that's why we need some safety built into the mix. And bonds is not safety. Those still have risk, just at a lower degree of it. From that standpoint, but it's something to consider in this thinking of having assets that kind of work at that you're not having risk eat away at it. It's yield and your spend rate of it, because bonds still could affect you negatively, and equities darn sure are going to make you unhappy at times. And I don't have a bias. We handle all this for clients. I have these conversations every day at my day job, so I understand these worlds. But the objective is to get the right blend, Jeff.
Okay, so one last question, I'll let you go here.
Okay.
I mean, basically, a lot of this is predicated on the notion that inherently the insurance companies are safer than anything out there, or some mixture of what's going on in the market. And the question I've got is why do we believe that? Is that just historical performance or what? What's going to stop my insurance company from going out of business if, you know, everybody goes bust and they've got to pay out all their claims, as opposed to anybody like AT&T or even a mixture of everybody in the S&P 500?
Volatility is what's going to spend down your money on equities. No matter how many decades you look at, you have negative impact of markets going down. Now, what you have out there is there's a bit more to it, but, you know, their companies are rated on quality and how they're managed and the underlying assets. They essentially have to put their money in bonds and treasuries out there. You should also diversify, but there's also something you might want to look up. The Guarantee Act, which backs up those assets, each state has one, is something to consider in how much you put with an insurance company from that standpoint. So, but once again, this thought and idea is not to put 100% of your assets there either. I wouldn't put 100% in equities. I wouldn't put 100% in bonds, and I wouldn't put 100% in annuities either. That's when we come back to get the right blend to give you the highest probability of success.
Sounds like you're walking into the 50-50-50 rule.
Yeah, it kind of leads to 50-50. Thanks for the call, Jeff.
All right, Jeff. Good stuff. See, he started talking about long-term bonds, but really looking for is the income.
But here is the other thing, and he's off the air, but this is the other thing I wanted to throw in, you know, subject to everything surviving. I'll tell you one big problem, U.S. defaults on treasuries. Everything goes to hell. Everything globally goes to hell. So you won't even have money to buy gold.
Did you watch that a couple days ago?
No.
Oh, you're behind?
I have not got to it yet.
I'll keep my mouth shut.
He's talking. That was Walking Dead music. I haven't started the new season yet. So
tell him about the book, Gregory.
Oh, you won't. To help people save on taxes.
My wife read the book and endorses it, by the way.
I have so many conversations today about people are trying to tax us more. So we got some people out there wanting to run for president, and I'm not one of them, but there's a lot running that want to like crush the economy, and they're wanting to raise your taxes. And it's you. You think it's your neighbor, your brother, that guy across town. No, it's you. These tax brackets we have are set to automatically go back up in about 7 years, unless somebody permanently can lock it down, but then somebody can unlock it later. There's opportunity here the next few years. I'm going to send you a book. You've got to call 504-832-9200. Tell them you want that book on tax efficiency, and we're going to put it in the mail to you.
You're home away from the show, winningatlife.com and the Winning at Life app. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual's situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest, subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks & Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks & Associates. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.